All right. So a year ago, I took some time and sat down like I always do, and I wrote out some goals for the year. I'm a very goal-driven person. I love attempting to achieve goals. For those of you that are familiar with the Enneagram, I'm a 3 through and through. The 3 is the achiever on the Enneagram, and so just love achieving things, love writing out goals and then checking them off once I've completed them. And I was pretty confident that was going to be a great year. We just bought a house and we'd settled into a new house, and we just hired an associate youth pastor here at Northbrook that was going to help in our student ministry, and I just knew it was going to be my year. And then, well, you know, 2020 became 2020. And so I have to be honest, this year I'm a little more cautious with my goal setting. This year, you know, most years I feel like I enter a new year kind of like a football team running on the field, like confident, fired up. This year I feel more like walking into an antique store with a 2-year-old. Just kind of like cautious, let's not touch anything. And I don't know where you find yourself at the beginning of a new year. Maybe you come into this year feeling optimistic. Maybe you feel good. Maybe you even have goals that you've set out for yourself. Maybe you are excited about reading through the New Testament in a year. And if that's you, great. That's awesome. Maybe for others of us, though, we're maybe not as optimistic about the year. Maybe for some of us, we have no goals, only to simply survive and get through each day as it comes. And regardless of where you find yourself in the room when it comes to this year, I think one thing that we can all agree on is we want 2021 to be better than 2020. And while certainly some circumstances, in fact, maybe many circumstances this year will be beyond our control, I think we can all agree that there will be some things that will be within our control. Our attitudes, our choices, our habits, our mindset. There are certainly some things that we can control. And so the question that I've been wrestling with as we start a new year that I'd like you to wrestle with me this morning is this question. How can I craft a life that will allow me to live well even if difficult circumstances come my way? Because here's what I don't want. I do not want to live this year angry, burned out, irritable, reactive, or even indifferent. And if I'm honest, I was all those things at some point in this past year. But I don't want to live that way. If there is a way to live well this year, I want to find it. I was with my son this past week. I took him out to breakfast. He's 8. And we were sitting and we were talking about Christmas. And I asked him what some of his favorite presents were that he got for Christmas. And he did pretty well this year. His grandparents got him some Legos. And a cousin got him a Nerf gun. And we got him some shark stuff because he's really into sharks. And sure enough, the first two things he said did not surprise me. He mentioned the Legos and the Nerf gun. But then the third thing caught me a little off guard. The third thing he came up with, he was like, oh, well, I like the Legos and the Nerf gun. Oh, and socks. He's 8. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? Socks? I'm like, wow, we really failed as parents this Christmas, clearly, if socks made the top 3. And he said, yeah, Dad, like, I really needed socks. And I started to think about that, and I thought, you know, that's how I want to live in 2021. Like, when 2021 gives me socks, when circumstances happen beyond my control, like I want to see the good in it. I want to live with gratitude and joy and thankfulness no matter what comes my way. And so here's a question that I'd like you to think about. What would it look like? What would it take? Is it even possible for you to live with joy and gratitude and thankfulness no matter what happens this coming year? I think it is possible. In fact, I think Jesus speaks to it, and that's what I want to look at today in Matthew 11, if you have your Bibles, Matthew 11, 28 through 30. Jesus is speaking to a crowd of Jewish people, and I think it's important to realize the context in which Jesus is speaking. Jesus is speaking to a crowd that is going through their own struggles and life problems. This is a Jewish crowd that has been ruled by a foreign government for hundreds of years. The Roman Empire has oppressed their people, and there is no glimmer of hope on the horizon of things changing. And the Roman Empire has taxed the Jewish people, exerted power over them, and things have gotten so bad that groups of Jewish sects have sprung up that are basically terrorist organizations that are going to war against Rome. And the Roman Empire, just to show their power in many cities, has put up crosses and has executed enemies of Rome on these crosses, and in some cases has just left them up as a reminder to the Jewish people of who, in fact, is actually in control. So there's a lot of tension, a lot of anger between the government and the Jewish people. But it's not just the Roman Empire, it's not just their government, it's also their religious leaders that are part of the problem. The Jewish religious leaders are also exerting power over the Jewish people. They are taxing them as well. There's a temple tax that the Jewish people have to pay. But more than just a tax, the Jewish religious leaders are also telling them how they have to live, telling them what they can and can't do. And many of the Jewish religious leaders have taken it so far as to say that as soon as the Jewish people clean up their act and act more holy and more righteous, then God will allow them to stop being oppressed by the Roman Empire. God's just waiting for the Jewish people to get it together. So that's a lot of pressure if you're a Jewish person living in Jesus' day. And so we come to Jesus' words in Matthew 11, and what I want you to notice is what Jesus does and what he doesn't do. Because throughout Jesus' ministry, what you'll notice is Jesus doesn't change the cultural circumstances the Jewish people find themselves in. Instead, he offers them a better way to live in the circumstances they're in. You know, a lot of times in life, when things don't go the way we want, what do? Well, we ask God to change the circumstances. But more often than not, God is more interested in changing us. And so Jesus comes into this world, and he doesn't change the cultural circumstances, but rather he offers a way to live in the circumstances they're in. And in Matthew 11, verses 28 through 30, we read some of Jesus' words on this subject. Matthew 11, 28, Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened." Anyone feeling weary and burdened today? And he says, "I will give you rest." But not just any rest. He says, "I'll give you rest for your soul." Jesus isn't talking about just giving you an extra day off work or a few more hours of sleep. Jesus is talking about giving you a rest that allows your soul to feel lighter. Have you ever been in a season where your soul just felt heavy? Maybe you're in that season, or maybe you just came out of that season where everything just felt overwhelming, and it was like your soul felt heavy. And then maybe you've had the fortune of being in other seasons where your soul just felt light, rested, recharged. Jesus says that there is a way of living where our souls can live lightly. In fact, I love the way that the Message version translates these three verses, so I want to read them again. Matthew 11, 28 through 30, this time the Message version. "Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. I don't know about you, but if there is a way to live freely and lightly in 2021, I want it. And I'll do whatever it takes. I don't want to live burned out and irritable and angry and reactionary. I want to live lightly. And Jesus says there is a way to do that despite the circumstances you find yourself in. And Jesus says it starts by taking on his yoke. Now, yoke is not a word that we use a lot today, modern day English. But in Jesus' day, yoke had two meanings. The first meaning was pretty common. It was a yoke was a piece of equipment that they put on a pair of oxen as they plowed a field. But there was also a second meaning for the word yoke. The second meaning, yoke, was a religious term. It was each rabbi had their own slant or teachings on the rules and laws in the Old Testament and how you were to live out and obey those rules and laws. And so each teacher had their own slant or their own interpretation of how to live life based on the Old Testament laws and regulations, and that was called their yoke. Each rabbi had their own yoke, their own interpretation, their own slant. And of course, they would pass down their yoke or their interpretation of the Old Testament law onto their disciples. And their disciples would inherit that yoke, that interpretation of the law. And so Jesus, when Jesus says, take my yoke upon you, his disciples would completely understand what he's saying. What Jesus is saying is, take on my interpretation of how to live life. Because the interpretation of the Old Testament laws wasn't about just understanding Old Testament laws. It was understanding how to live life well. And so for Jesus to say, come to me and take my yoke upon you, what he's essentially saying is, come live like me. And if you live like me, you'll find rest for your soul, and you can live lighter. Apparently, Jesus is offering us this way to live like him. And when we do, we live lighter. But how do we do that? It's one thing to say it. What does it look like to actually live it? And so in our time remaining, I want to give you two thoughts, two ideas on how we can take on Jesus' yoke and live like him, and as we enter a new year, live lighter. So the first thought for you in taking on Jesus' yoke, living like him, means submitting control to him. Submit control to him. You can't take on Jesus' way of living if you're firmly convinced that you are in control. Someone once said there are two types of people in the world, those that think they're in control and those that know they aren't. Now, all the control freaks in the room said, I don't like this guy. When is Pastor Mike coming back? But, I mean, let's be honest. If the year that will not be named taught us anything, it's that we are not as in control as we thought we were. There are so many moments last year when I was like, all right, I give up. I can't control it. I can't control my life. I can't control my family's health. I can't control the economy. I can't control our world. I can't control so much of it. And the moments where I tried to control it, where I just dug my heels in and tried to have control, those are the moments where I felt the most frustrated and angry and irritable because I wasn't in control. And part of taking on the yoke that Jesus offers us and living lightly is letting go of our need to control everything. Realizing that we are not in control and we've never been in control, and that's a good thing. Our Creator, our Heavenly Father, is in control, and He is more wise and more loving, and He is more suited to be in control of our lives than we are. See, when we let go of the need to be in control, it's not that we just stop trying. It's not that we say, well, all right, God's in control. He can do whatever he wants. I'm just not even going to try. No, when we let go of our need to control, we let go of the weight to control outcomes. And we suddenly realize that we can live our lives the best of our ability, but we don't have to feel the weight of making sure everything happens the way that we want it to. We can simply submit control to our Heavenly Father. The writer of the book of Proverbs puts it this way in Proverbs 19:21, "You can make many plans, but the Lord's purpose will prevail." Now, something that I've begun to understand more and more, and maybe you already knew this, I'm a slow learner, so sometimes it takes me longer than other people, but something that I'm beginning to understand more and more each day is this simple truth. God doesn't need me. He doesn't. But he does invite me to be a part of what he's doing in the world. God doesn't need me. He doesn't need me. I'm not Superman. You're not Superman. You're not Wonder Woman. He doesn't need us to run the world. But he does invite us to be a part of what he's doing in the world and bringing his kingdom down to earth. And there's something freeing when you understand that. Like, it's one thing to be needed at a party. It's another thing to be invited to the party. And some of us are like, well, actually, I like to feel needed. So I like to actually be. But you know what? It's fine to be needed at the party until everything goes wrong and suddenly that uncle that nobody invited shows up and like all chaos breaks loose. And then suddenly you don't want to be needed, do you? And it's fine to feel like you're in control and needed until 2020 happens. And if you need to feel in control and need to feel needed, that is a heavy burden to carry through life. But when you realize that it's not that we're needed, it's that we're invited to be a part of what God's doing in the world, but we are not in control of the outcomes, well, that frees us to live lightly. Sometimes, as a pastor, I'll go into seasons where I'll just start to feel this weight to control everything. And it can feel overwhelming. In fact, this last year was a perfect example. We got into the middle of the year, and I just felt this weight of, okay, how do we minister to students? Like, I'm talking to all these counselors, and they're talking about teenage depression and anxiety, and they're talking about the long-term health effects of a lockdown, and I can't even be within 6 feet of students. Like, how is this supposed to work? And it just started to feel overwhelming. And in seasons where I have those moments, I have a quote that is in my office. It's on the wall, and it's from a talk that Cardinal Dieden gave, a cardinal back in 1979. And every once in a while, when I start to feel overwhelmed, I just read this quote. And so I'd like to read it for you now. And if you're here today and you're feeling overwhelmed, you're feeling like the weight of the world is on your shoulders, I hope you can take a deep breath and let his words sink in. It helps now and then to step back and take a long view. The kingdom is not only beyond our efforts, it is even beyond our vision. We accomplish in our lifetime only a tiny fraction of the magnificent enterprise that is God's work. Nothing we do is complete, which is a way of saying that the kingdom always lies beyond us. We cannot do everything, and there is a sense of liberation in realizing that. This enables us to do something and to do it very well. It may be incomplete, but it is a beginning, a step along the way, an opportunity for the Lord's grace to enter and do the rest. We may never see the end results, but that is the difference between the master builder and the worker. We are workers, not master builders, ministers, not messiahs. We are prophets of a future, not our own. Now, a lot is unknown about 2020, but one thing I do know is that I am not the master builder. God is in control of 2021 2023. And so I can work. I'm invited into the work, but I don't have to control it. And as we let go of control, as we let go of having to control everything, we begin to live a little lighter. But there's also a need to let go of yokes, burdens that we've accumulated over the years that can be holding us back from truly taking on Jesus' yoke of living lighter. And I don't know what yokes or burdens you've accumulated over the years, but we all have them. This last year was a very illuminating year for me. I learned a lot about myself. And one thing that I noticed was I had this yoke or this burden that I'd picked up probably in childhood. I don't even know where I picked it up. And it was this yoke or this burden of having everyone like me. It went way beyond just wanting to love and serve people. Like it was this yoke that I had picked up, and for a while it worked, right? Because that's how we pick up yokes. Because for a while they work for us, and so I had this deep burden to make everyone like me and to make sure everyone was happy with what I was doing as a pastor. And then 2020 happened, and no matter what I did when it came to running the youth ministry, you know, when should we meet? How should we meet? How can we make everyone safe? No matter what I did, suddenly I realized I could not make everyone like me or like the decisions I was making. And it was devastating. And I realized that it was a yoke. It was a burden that I had picked up. And I'd like to tell you that once I realized it, I was like, oh, I don't want to carry this anymore, and I just took it off and set it down, but that's just not how it happens. It was more like God began to chip away at that yoke. Slowly, painfully, he began to help me lay down that need to be liked by everyone. And so like I said, I don't know what burdens or yokes you've brought into the new year. Maybe for some of you, one of your burdens involves a high school classmate that you haven't talked to in years. But every time you go on social media and you see their political post, your blood begins to boil. And you get angry and irritable. And living lightly is the last thing you're doing. And social media can be a wonderful thing, but if it's not helping you live lightly, maybe it's a burden that you don't have to keep carrying into 2021. Maybe there'd be ways to chip away at that burden. Or maybe for others of you, you walked into 2021 and you have this burden of being perfect. Because even though you've heard that you're loved simply for who you are, created by God, the truth is you only feel as loved by God and the people around you as your latest accomplishment. And that's a lot of pressure. That's a pretty heavy burden when you really feel like you're only as loved as whatever you've produced or done for people lately or for as good as you are for God. Like, that's a lot of pressure when you feel this need to be perfect to be loved. And maybe in 2021, there's an opportunity to really embrace the fact that you are worthy and loved by God simply because you are His creation. Or maybe for others of us, we walked into 2021 with this burden that we need just a little bit more. Like, I'll be able to live lightly once I just have a little more money. Once I have just a few more possessions. Once I have just one more raise, once I just have a little bit more, then I'll be able to live lightly, then all my problems will go away, then I won't be irritable, then I won't be angry, then I won't be burned out. I just need a little bit more. The reality is a little bit more won't change the state of your soul. And maybe there's an opportunity as we start 2021 to address that belief and to find contentment and joy in the moment, and not to continue to believe the lie that it's just a step away. Well, I don't know what your burden is that you've carried into 2021, but I do know that if we really want to take Jesus' yoke, his way of living on us this year, then we got to get rid of all the other yokes and burdens that we've accumulated over the years. Surrender control and let go of the burdens that are holding us back. And once we've done that, that brings me to my second thought for you today. So after we submit control, number two, we intentionally choose rest. Jesus says, come to me, all you who are weary and heavy burdened, and I will give you rest. But here's the reality. He offers rest to us, but we still have to take it. And in our world today, and especially in American culture, we are not good at resting. We would much rather accumulate badges like hustle and grind and achieve. This past month, I got an invite on Facebook to join a workout group for the month of December, kind of an accountability workout group. And I was like, you know, I'm going to drink a lot of eggnog and eat a lot of cookies. Probably wouldn't be the worst thing to have an accountability group as I work out this month. So I joined it. And things went fine for 4 or 5 days. And then I noticed people continuing to post like, no rest days for me. Like, I'm working out again today. And they're working out the same muscle groups. And you know, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but I do have a physical education minor. And I do know that if you want maximum results, you have to let your muscle groups rest. Like, you can't continually work the same muscle group day after day after day after day to get maximum results. So I just politely commented in the group and said, hey, love the enthusiasm, but I mean, just to be clear, like, we all do need to have rest day, the rest certain muscle groups for maximum results. And one of the admins of the group responded back and said to me, yeah, that's true, but the point of this group is to work out the same muscle group for 30 straight days. I said, okay, well, I'm out. I'll be drinking eggnog. And I have to wonder, like, what are the badges that we are accumulating costing us? Like, in our effort to collect all of these shiny badges, is it worth it? If the result is that we are burned out, irritable, angry, stressed out, indifferent, reactionary people. At what point do we just say, the badges just aren't, they're not worth it? It's not working. What we notice in Jesus' life is this rhythm of work. Like, I'm not here to say that we shouldn't work. Like, we're created to work. We're created to achieve, to produce, to create. But with Jesus, we see this balance of work and rest. As we read through the Gospels, we see Jesus healing and teaching, and then typically the very next sentence in the Gospels, the writer writes that Jesus got away from the crowds and rested. And I have to wonder, like, why did Jesus get away and rest? The gospel writers really don't tell us, but I think there are two reasons that Jesus got away from the crowds and rested. Number one, I think Jesus was modeling for his disciples and for us a healthy life. I think he was modeling for his disciples the life he wanted them to live after he was gone. But secondly, more than that, and I don't know this, so if you want to disagree with me, that's fine. I don't have any proof for this. But I do know that Jesus was fully God, but also fully human. And because he was fully human, I have to wonder if the reason that he sometimes got away and rested was because he was tired of dealing with the crowds. I mean, crowds can be annoying, let's just face it. Crowds that are coming to you wanting miracles and wanting to be fed for free, but you also know 3 years from now are going to be screaming for you to be crucified, they can be annoying. And Jesus was fully human, and I wonder if he knew that in order to love the crowds as he needed to love them, he needed to get away and rest and recharge. See, resting is not about just being lazy or just taking a break. Resting is a crucial component of living well. We don't rest just because God tells us to rest, so that is a good reason. We rest because in resting, we prepare ourselves for the work that is ahead. And I love how lately in the past 20 years or so, study after study has come out showing that resting, as God told us long ago, is the best thing that we can possibly do if we want to live life well. For example, a study was conducted of the Stanford College basketball team back in 2011. And athletes on the team were asked to record their sleep schedules for 4 weeks. And then at the end of the 4 weeks, they were measured at how fast they could run, how well they could shoot, all these different athletic things. And then after those 4 weeks, they were asked to sleep as much as they could for the next 4 weeks and record their sleep patterns for the next 4 weeks. But sleep as much as they could. Change nothing else. Not change their diet. They weren't changing their practice schedule. Just sleeping more. And then after those 4 weeks, they were again tested to see how fast they could run, how well they could shoot. And here's what they found. During those last 4 weeks, team members slept on average 2 more hours per night. And just by sleeping on average 2 more hours a night, here's what they found. On average, the members on the team sprinted 4% faster, made baskets with 9% more accuracy, and demonstrated significantly faster reaction time. The researchers duplicated the study with college swimmers, with basically the same results. Just by sleeping more, they became better at what they were trying to do. For some of us in the room, one of the best things that we could do for ourselves in 2021 is just get a little more sleep. Now, teenagers in the room, that doesn't mean sleep in more. It might mean going to bed a little earlier. You're welcome, parents. But it's not just sleep, of course. Rest is so much more than sleep. Matt Dixon is one of the world's top triathlete coaches. He coaches some of the best athletes in the world. And he was once asked, what separates the really good athletes from the absolute best athletes? And you might say, oh, he'd probably say nutrition or mindset or being willing to grind and work out a lot. But Matt Dixon said, what separates the absolute best athletes from just the good ones is the absolute best athletes have the courage to rest. Not what you were expecting, right? Matt Dixon said that one of the hardest things that he has to do when a new athlete comes and trains with him is help the athlete see the importance of rest on their performance. And it's not just athletes. Writer Stephen King was once interviewed and asked why he's able to write book after book. And King attributed a lot of his success to the fact that he is willing to step away and rest his brain and then come back to his writing. King put it this way. He said, for me, not working is the real work. When he got away and rested, it was when he came back that he had his best ideas and was able to write well. But of course, it's not just writers. Multiple studies have confirmed the same principle applies to the business world. The highest producing people in companies typically are not those who work the most hours, but those who have found a rhythm of focused work and intentional rest. In fact, they did a huge study of some Harvard graduates that spanned multiple years. And they took the top performers in Harvard and they followed them after they graduated into their fields. And they wanted to see who really did well and who didn't and what was the difference. And so after a number of years of following all of these brilliant people from Harvard, they looked at the ones that were doing well and the ones that weren't. And they looked at what the difference was. And they could only find one thing that was different between the ones that were really excelling in their jobs and the ones that weren't. And the ones that were really, really doing well had hobbies. Not what you were expecting. The ones that were really doing well did their work, and then they went off and they ran, or they golfed, or they rock climbed, or they went fishing, or they went hunting. And the ones that weren't doing well didn't have hobbies and were working 70 to 80 hours a week. And because they were working so much, they weren't producing quality work. Some of you don't like me right now. Trust me, I'm an achiever. I get it. We rest because in resting, we live every other part of our life well. But notice what I also said. I said intentional rest. Not all rest is created equal. For me, I know there are certain things that I can do when I'm not working that do not recharge me, that do not make me feel rested. Some of the things that come to mind when I think of things that don't recharge me and don't make me feel rested are mindlessly scrolling social media, Netflix binging, eating junk food. Those are all things that I can do, but they don't really make me feel rested or recharged. And I'm sure there are things that you can think of that you do when you're not working that you do, but they don't really recharge you. They don't really make you feel rested. And then there are other things that I do that I know that when I do them, I feel rested. Maybe not physically rested, but certainly emotionally and spiritually rested. Things like getting up early in the morning and reading my Bible with a cup of coffee, spending time with God, or reading a good book, or going for a run, or golfing. Okay, sometimes I'm golfing. If I'm having a bad day, not so much. But playing a board game with my kids, going on a date with my wife. Those are all things that emotionally and spiritually recharge me. And here's a great test. If you're not sure if an activity is actually helping you, recharge you, and make you feel rested or not, see how you react after that activity when something bad happens. Like for me, when I'm just mindlessly scrolling through social media and then one of my kids comes in and they spill some juice or they do something that irritates me, what I find is I'm very quick to react. I can tell I'm kind of on edge and I react quickly. On the other hand, when I'm doing something that's life-giving, when I just went for a run or I went on a date with my wife or I was reading a book or drinking a cup of coffee and then they spill juice or they do something, what I find is I'm much more reflective. And what they did didn't change. What changed was the state of my soul. The truth is we all have things that we do that help us live lightly, and there are things that we do when we're not working that don't help at all. And so what would it look like this year to be intentional that when you rest well? As we close today, I'd just like to challenge all of us to think about one thing that we can start this week to help us take on Jesus' yoke and live lightly. Maybe for some of us, it's as simple as acknowledging that we are not in control and allowing God to be in control and simply just living in the moment. Maybe for others of us, there's a yoke, there's a burden that we've added on over the years, and we need to let God start chipping away at that burden or that yoke as we begin another year. And maybe for others of us, there's an opportunity this week to intentionally rest well, to accept Jesus' invitation to take his yoke upon us and find rest for our souls. And all of this, of course, with one simple end goal, that this year we would live a little more like Jesus. Heavenly Father, I just thank you for your goodness and your love. I thank you that as we start another year, one thing is certain, that there is hope because you are in control. And Father, I pray that you would give us all the courage and the wisdom to live this year from a place of rest. Father, may we not live burned out, angry, irritated, reactive lives this year, but may we live with joy and gratitude as we take your yoke upon us. In Jesus' name, amen.